So now, for the first time in Peach State Prospects history, we have a guest on the show. We are lucky to be joined today by the voice of the Mississippi Braves, Chris Harris. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm fantastic. Thank you guys for having me on, and hope you guys are doing well.
Yep, I am doing well. Joe, how are you?
I'm doing well also.
Full disclosure, we're all laughing a little bit because I forgot to hit record, and Chris just had a fantastic answer to our first question. But he's going to hang in there. He's a trooper. So we're going to have to do it again. And Chris, I mean, you've been named Southern League Broadcaster of the Year twice now in your career. You're a fantastic play-by-play guy. We're lucky to have you with the team. And you've done it now since 2018. A lot of guys have come through the system since then, and you've had a chance to watch them. But the guy we want to talk about first off the bat today is Spencer Schwellenbach. The big news of the day is he was announced that he's going to be the starter for the Braves on Wednesday. And, you know, he hasn't been with Mississippi long. He made two really great starts there, 13 total scoreless innings, 17 strikeouts. And, you know, for you in that time, what has stood out for you in terms of why the Braves would make this move and what Spencer can bring to the major league level to be successful?
Yeah. And first off, I'll tell you this, look, you're never, anytime anything happens like that in my world of, in minor league baseball, you just roll with it. I'll never forget 2019, Dallas Keuchel came through the organization. I did a great interview with him, got all the way through it, realized I had not pressed record on the recorder. So it happens. It happens. You just roll with it. But yeah, Spencer Schwellenbach, I thought I was going to make the joke. I thought you were going to bring me on to talk about him being Farm Bureau Pitcher of the Week this week in Mississippi, but he had a little better news today than that. But for Spencer, you know, very well deserved. Just really knows what he's doing out there on the mound. I was mentioning the other day to somebody, you know, when you look at him, it kind of reminds me a little bit of AJ Smith-Shaw and the fact they're both athletes on the mound. And when, you know, between starts and different things, just some things that I've learned throughout the years, especially, you know, talking to pitchers, I like to sit down with them, even doing an interview, but, you know, before or after the interview, just to kind of get an idea of what they're trying to do on the mound. How are they throwing their pitches? Do they try to work backwards like a lot of pitchers do now? Pitch shape, which is a terminology I've learned a lot about the last couple of years. And if you bring up Hurston Waldrop, maybe in this, we can talk a little bit more about that because there's some interesting things about him right now too. But for Schwellenbach, you know, one thing he told me was he's got a 5-pitch mix now. He throws the fastball, which mid to upper 90s. We did see a 99 a few times in his last start against Chattanooga. Throws the cutter, upper 80s, low 90s. The slider in the upper 80s, and he has the curveball and the changeup. But he throws all those pitches for strikes. I think the biggest difference with Schwellenbach, he has those 5 pitches, but he can throw them all for strikes. Faced Chattanooga last week in his second and I guess last Double-A start, and he dominated that lineup. It's not a very good Chattanooga Lookouts team, Double-A Reds, but held him to just 2 hits over 7 innings. And, you know, if he could have gone out there 20 innings, they probably wouldn't have scored a run against him. And when you look at a player, you know, whether it was last year, AJ Smith-Shaw or any player really, I always say they're going to tell you when they're ready to get moved up to another level. Maybe not by their stat line, you know, what they're doing necessarily there, but just the boxes you can check. When you watch and see a guy, they usually can tell you when they're ready to move up. And, you know, watching Spencer pitch, I think everybody, you know, the scouts that were there, you know, talking to our coaching staff, it was just sort of like that eyes wide open. Like this guy is not going to be here very long. And I tweeted out something last week or X'd out something, you know, when he was touching 99, he's trying to make his stay in Double-A as fast as possible or as short as possible. But you know, just a really interesting dude. And going back to his college days, you know, in Nebraska, he's a two-way player. Wasn't just an average two-way player. He was the John Olerud Award winner. He was the best two-way player in all of college baseball. And one interesting thing when we did the interview was he told me, you know, how he became just a pitcher or made that transition to the mound and how tough it was. But during that pandemic year, he started just throwing into a net in his backyard. And he thought, man, I'm kind of good at this. I'm throwing mid-90s. I probably maybe should stick to that. And I think you know, once he went through, I think maybe his first slump during that third year, he's like, okay, I'm just sort of going to stick to pitching, and became their closer. And the rest is history. And of course, you know, the 2 years he had to miss with Tommy John, that's, you know, I think sometimes, you know, injuries and that time away can make you really focus on some different things. And I think he really did a lot of homework during that time away, and he's come back, and I mean, he's special. I mean, there's, what more can you say? I mean, the guys that have come through here, that you can say there's just something different about them. You knew there was something different about Max Fried. You knew there was something different about Spencer Strider. You can tell there's something different about Spencer Schwellenbach. So, you know, I'm sure the nerves are going to be there tomorrow. And I would say, don't judge, you know, the first outing by, you know, everything in one start, but I think he's got the ability to be there and be there for a long time, because he has that athleticism. He has the mindset. You can tell he's not a guy that's going to get shaken by any situation. And man, I'm looking forward to seeing him pitch.
Yeah, Chris, I'll say, I think you've touched on a lot of things that we mentioned when we were doing our player profile on him.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we talked about this a little bit this morning too, me and Garrett, but he's not someone who's going to hurt himself out there. You know, there's guys with an arm like his that can touch 99, 100, that they're going to walk guys, and they're not attacking. But I watched Spencer pitch, and he's just in attack mode. He's mm-hmm. filling up the strike zone, but not doing it in a way where everything is super hittable. And so if he's going to get beat, he's going to make the other team beat him. And it's really kind of one of those things that is exciting in a prospect for me, to have both the arm talent, but also filling up the strike zone the way he does. He doesn't walk a lot of guys, and his mentality is just very impressive out there on the mound.
So, yeah, no, and that's the one thing at the double A level. That's the one of the big differences. Yeah, you've got all the big time prospects. Nobody skips double A here. But when you have somebody like him, that, like you said, he makes you beat him. And there's not a lot of guys at this level that can do that on a consistent basis. And that's why he's been so dominant here.
Yeah, I know Garrett and I are very excited to see him pitch tomorrow night. And I think that the rest of the Braves fans around here should be very excited about what he's capable of doing too. So speaking of exciting prospects, you've been with the Mississippi Braves since 2018. You've been in the Southern League for years before that as well. You've gotten to see quite a few top Braves prospects, Michael Harris, Austin Riley, some of them that aren't with the team any longer, William Contreras, Shea Langeliers, just to name a few. Who's a prospect that stands out to you as the best prospect that you've seen come through the Braves system and stop off in Mississippi? I feel like we kind of know the pitcher that you might name here, a name that we, you know, a similar name to what we've been talking about, but I'll let you answer that from your experience.
That's an interesting question. You know, I made the move from Biloxi, which was a Brewers affiliate, to Mississippi in 2018. And we played Mississippi quite a bit. And, you know, watching Ronald Acuna, of course, we played them many, many times. I think Ronald Acuna Jr. was probably the most exciting player for the Mississippi Braves that I've seen come through. Number two has to be Michael Harris. I mean, you know, he was only with us for 2 months, but, you know, I think just the amount of hype he had, the amount of swagger that he had, you just knew it was a matter of time before he got to the big leagues. I mean, I think a lot of people were surprised that it had taken as long as it did for him to get up there. But Mike was just special. I think no matter how long I do this, you know, Michael Harris is going to be one of the guys that I'll always remember just by the way he carried himself. Such a great dude. A leader, and then just that contagious swagger that he gave off and just the way he carried himself. So Mike was just a ton of fun to be around and watch, and I hope he can play and be a perennial all-star for a long, long time.
Yeah, I we're all fortunate to have, you know, someone like Michael Harris to watch every single night. Mm-hmm. Favorite team. His personality is incredible. Someone that is a joy to see on and off the field. Every time he does an interview, his personality shines through, and you know, not surprised, he's one of your favorites at all.
And kind of on that note, I mean, there have been a lot of big personalities that have come through this system. You know, guys like Trey Harris has come through the system. I know he's a guy that a lot of people like. And, for you know, the guys that you've seen, who's been really the best ambassador to the team? You know, a guy that really stands out, in the community, a guy that stands out in the clubhouse, even someone who's, just a funny guy and a fun guy to be around.
No, that's a great question. And so much gets just made of, prospect status, and that means a lot, obviously. But a lot of times in the minor leagues, it's some of the more not big name guys who carry a clubhouse, who carry things around, like you said, the community that goes out and, goes to schools, goes to read to kids, and volunteers for different things. And you mentioned Trey. Trey's always going to be one of my favorite people. He came back to Mississippi for several years in a row, and he never got really very salty. I think we got one this year, and Justin Dean, who is just an infectious positive guy, always got a smile on his face, always plays the game hard. Drew Lugbauer. I still think there's going to be a team at maybe Oakland where he is now that's going to let him, get a chance at the big league level. He's got the best power that I've ever seen hit baseballs in our ballpark, which is not a very easy place to hit home runs. And he made it look small quite a bit. Drew was always a great ambassador as well. A few other guys on the team this year. Cody Milligan is just a really fun guy to have around, and a leader in the clubhouse. Brian Castile was a really fun guy to have around. There's just been a lot of different guys that have been special to fans and to just to be around it. You can't get a lot of these big time prospects without, tutelage from some of these other guys. They might not be as talented or as good, but the way they play the game, the way they carry themselves off the field, that's something that can really make a difference with a guy that has tons and tons of talent.
Yeah, I think those are all great points there. I think sometimes we kind of don't focus too much on guys like a Drew Lugbauer or Justin, because we do get to focus more on the hyped up prospects like a Ronald Acuña, Michael Harris, those guys. But I think those guys, like you said, are the ones that are the glue in the clubhouse, and they kind of keep things light. And they also kind of show those younger kids who may have all the hype, kind of the way to go about their business.
Yeah, and I think the coaches too. I mean, a lot of these coaches like that we have this year have in the past, maybe they're not necessarily names that people recognize as well, but the work that they're able to, do with these players between their outings, and all the flips, the thousands and thousands of flips they give in the cage. I mean, I think, a guy like Brian Snitker, I mean, nobody probably knew, unless you're a diehard fan, who Brian Snitker was before he got named the interim manager. Spent, 40 years in the minor leagues grinding, helping out young guys to fulfill their dream, and then all of a sudden, he gets put into that role too, to now, be one of the best managers in the game. And there's so many the minor leagues. I've been blessed to be around the minors for a long time, and it's yeah, you get tired of the bus rides, you get tired of all the fast food and the hot dogs and lack of sleep. But it's at its purest level. I mean, it's fun to like hang out in the lobby of a hotel and just get to know some of these guys at a personal level. I've the people that I will remember the most are usually the ones that you just get a chance to know how their family's doing, or any something like that. Usually those are connections that matter more than how do you throw your four-seam fastball. So that's the great thing about the minors. If you've obviously with the different teams around Georgia, it's that intimate environment. You get to know the players at a personal level, and it's really cool. For me, it's been really cool to watch, whichever team I've been with, to see them get to the big leagues and be able to kind of stay in contact when I've been able to come and work the postseason the last, few years, to run into a Spencer Strider, and to run into, the Ozzie Albies and the running into Mike and all these different guys, you know, it's hardly ever our conversation comes to baseball. It's more so about, hey, you remember when this happened on the bus, or you remember when he did something, you know? So that's always the fun stuff about the minor leagues.
Yeah, I've known a couple of people who have been like host families for some like single mm-hmm. A, and they speak to those players still to this day. I mean, even those who have no longer playing, their career's been done. They have families of their own now, their own kids, and they really develop a relationship that is something that I think is actually incredible. I mean, think about you; these kids are 18, 19 years old. You're seeing them grow. So it's not sure. just. Their career, but also them just becoming adults and being mm-hmm. becoming, and I think that's also something that gets lost on a lot of people.
Sure,
I want to talk a little bit about we've talked about personalities a little bit. And one thing that comes to mind is the rotation in Mississippi. It's an absolutely incredible rotation with different personalities, different pitching styles, and you have a guy like Hurston Waldrop, who's mm-hmm. you know our top pitching prospect or top pick and a high mm-hmm. top prospect for us, seems like a fiery competitor. Then you have an Ian Mejia who just seems like he's just never rattled by anything, super calm mm-hmm. out, always in control. We watched and we talked about his no hitter, got into a little bit of trouble there at the end of it, but never seemed like anything shook his confidence whatsoever. He was just cool the entire time, just went about it. The same way as he did from pitch one. And then you have Spencer Schwellenbach. And what is there like an internal competitiveness? I know we've heard from, you know, the Rome rotation a few years ago, we had Colby Aller and Mike Soroka mm-hmm. Tukey, and they said that they were out there feeding off of one of them would throw an incredible start and they would all feed off of that. Is there something like that going on with the rotation there in Mississippi? Do they feed off each other? Like a friendly competitiveness right within them?
Oh, no doubt. It's kind of funny you bring up the waves. Yeah, I can since 2018 I can remember the different waves. You know, that first year was Wright and, you know, Brooks Wilson and Tukey, and then you had Ian Anderson and Mueller and Davidson, and it's just crazy how all these guys kind of come through, and there's no doubt that you know, they compete against each other. One of the funny things or the interesting things I talked with Schwellenbach after his first start was that was game two of a doubleheader. And very rarely do you see two prospects pitch during a doubleheader. Usually your top prospect or the guy, the priority player is the term I've learned, gets to start game one. Then it's usually the older guy or the bullpen game in game two. But with the weather that week being very iffy, they wanted to get both Waldrop and Schwellenbach a start. So his first start was game two of that doubleheader. And the first game of the doubleheader happened to be Hurston Waldrop going eight innings in a seven-inning game, pitching the extra inning, picking up the win in his longest professional outing. And then I remember talking to Schwellenbach. He said, number one, I was in the clubhouse. I didn't know when to start getting ready and different things like that. And I look up and they're already in the sixth inning. But then he says, yeah, well, Hurston went eight innings. What have I got to do out there? So he said, you know, I better get out there and put a great effort on the mound. Of course, he went out and pitched six scoreless innings. And between those two guys, they went 14 innings of one run ball, like 17 strikeouts and two walks. But yeah, they really feed off each other. I posted a picture the other day in Chattanooga of Schwellenbach, Waldrop and Hayden Harris all together, and you know, kind of talking about different pitches they throw, how they grip them. Yeah, they feed off each other, but they also share information. I think that's one thing that I'm not necessarily saying has changed, but the willingness for guys to really talk to each other to say, "Oh wow," I mean, what do they say? You know, when you want to try to be somebody, the best form of flattery is to imitate them. And so, you know, I think Brooks Wilson kind of started it. He threw the great splitter, and now I saw Tyler Ferguson last year develop it. I've seen Patrick Halligan develop it. I've seen Ian Mejia now throws a splitter. And, of course, the best splitter out there is Hurston Waldrop that I've seen. And, you know, seeing some of the other guys say, okay, how do you throw that your splitter? Let me see if I can try and develop that or a different kind of pitch. So I think a lot of it is competitiveness. And I think a lot of it is more so wanting to pick up knowledge from someone else to help make themselves a little bit better. And that's one thing that I've kind of paid attention to this year, especially with those guys. And you don't really realize how smart some of these guys are. I, you know, had a conversation with Hurston the other day, and it kind of showed me how he throws his splitter and gave me some insights and how he attacks hitters. And, you know, says, I'll throw this type of splitter to a right-handed hitter, this type of splitter to a left-handed hitter. Then if this hitter has a certain swing shape, I'll throw a splitter this way. And I'm just looking at him thinking, wow, like he said it. And then he said, it's just science. And I think that part of the game has changed so much. And going back to where I said, you know, pitch shape. But I'm just thoroughly impressed. Wes McGuire, pitching coach, does just a phenomenal job of giving feedback when he needs to, and then backing off when he needs to. But these guys are smart. That's one thing about this crop of guys, is they really dive deep into the mental side of things and the physicality, the physics of throwing these pitches. And I don't know, my mind gets blown sometimes.
You actually mentioned a couple of guys that we really wanted to talk about there. Hayden Harris is really the one that Hayden Harris, Patrick Halligan. It's a good, you know, we talk about the rotation, those are the top prospects, but Hayden Harris, Roldy Munoz, Patrick Halligan, I mean, there's a very good bullpen there too. And kind of with those guys are the guys that tend to get through the system, and they don't get talked about, right? They're not on top 30 lists because they're just relief prospects, but they end up making an impact in major level. You know, with guys like Hayden Harris is one that we've been talking to a lot, and that, you know, the way he pitches is so unique, right? It's basically he's throwing a fastball every single time and good luck hitting it. You know, seeing that, you know, from him, seeing, you know, Munoz come up and throw 100, how impressive have those guys been? And do you really feel like in the next year they could be in Atlanta contributing?
Yeah, man, I apologize. I'm kind of going long with some of these answers, so feel free to cut me off if I get to rambling. But for Hayden, you know, he's one of these guys that, you know, I really didn't know who he was when he came up last year. And then it's kind of hard to really describe why or how he has the success he has. I mean, he's a, you know, super smart guy, and he's figured out a way to create that deception. I don't know if you were, if it was Garrett, you were asking me, you know, what's his velocity like, and, you know, what pitches are he throwing? It's just a fastball, and guys just can't hit it. I mean, it's interesting to watch, you know, from the press box side. You're watching how a hitter reacts, and you expect to look down at the Hawkeye data, the TrackMan data, and see like 96, 97, and it's just 91 to 93. But he has that success, and it's against right-handers and left-handers. So, I think he's a guy that has the opportunity to move quickly as well. You know, he's still here for now. He's got a 0.59 ERA, I think, right now. 27 strikeouts to 5 walks, but he gets it done. Great story too. I mean, he didn't have a job, played 5 years at Georgia Southern, didn't really have a sniff of playing pro ball, started using his LinkedIn account to send out his video, and, you know, Brave Scout responded and they signed him in July of that year. So that's just a guy you pull for. And I think he can kind of sense he's close, and, you know, I hope he gets a chance because he's got the stuff to do it.
Yeah, I think he's one of those guys that it's easy to root for a guy like that who really, really went out there and worked at his craft and took the time to advocate for himself, essentially. You know, he was a top prospect, wasn't on the radar, but he put himself out there and really figured out what it is that he does well and is just really perfected it. And I really am excited to see Hayden Harris make it too. I really think he's a big league reliever, and I'm hoping he gets a shot here because, again, it is an incredible story.
Well, and he knows who he is. He knows what he is. You know, a lot of times at this level, you know, a pitcher will, you know, I want to be a long man. Maybe I'm going to be a starter, but he knows what type of pitcher he needs to be and what he can be at that level. I think that I think that makes a difference. You mentioned Roldy Munoz. Of course, saw plenty of Rodery Munoz when he came through. You know, it just it's crazy looking out there because you think it's Rodery as many times as you see him, but you can't teach 100 mile an hour fastball. And I think he's continuing to develop that slider. It's gotten a lot better. Gave up a home run last week on that slider. I think it was more so a pitch that probably shouldn't have thrown in that situation, but you know, an impressive kid and someone that, I mean, a lot of these guys, I mean, sometimes you don't want to say the quiet part out loud, but there's several pieces here that, you know, when Alex Anthopoulos is going to have to do something that are very valuable commodities for other teams in that bullpen, you know, your Patrick Halligans, your Roldy Munoz, you know, you want to keep a guy like Hayden Harris, but I'm sure he'll be asked about because every scout I run into, they always are raving about Hayden Harris. So that kind of is what it is. The quiet part out loud. There's a lot of great assets here that yes, can get to Atlanta, but it can also, you know, make a deal happen because, you know, it's going to potentially happen at some point.
There have been 5 no hitters thrown in Mississippi. You've been around for 3 of those. The most recent, of course, was Ian Mejia, who threw only the second individual no-hitter in the team's history.
Mm-hmm.
Were one of those games, Ian Anderson had 14 strikeouts in 2019. That was one of the big ones. And then Bryce Elder and Diasbel Hernandez combined for a no-hitter in 2021. Were one of those 3 really the best individual performance that you've seen with Mississippi? Or is there really another one that's kind of stood out for you?
Wow. Great question. I think they're all a little bit different. Yeah, I think the one that really probably maybe resonates maybe more than the others is the Ian Anderson one because he did strike out 14, which matched Tommy Hansen's strikeout record for a single game, 14, from his no-hitter, which he threw back in 2008. Ian was just on that trajectory. She knew he was going to be really, really, really good. And Jeremy Walker pitched the last 2, and that's when Jeremy Walker was flying onto the scene and really pitching extremely well. So that one was really special. I remember Ian came up to the booth after the game and did an interview, and you know it was the really the first no hitter that I'd been a part of. To be honest, I'd had some thrown against my teams, but it was the first no hitter that I'd been able to call. So that one will resonate. You know, Bryce Elder, and then of course Diasbel Hernandez, the one that sticks out. The thing that sticks out from that one is Diasbel, you know, jumping 10 feet in the air after he got that final out. And then, you know, Mejia, I mean, I kind of sensed it in the second inning. I mean, I really did. Like, it just seemed like, okay, this guy is just pitching. I think you mentioned earlier, just so confidently with that swagger. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's just a 7-inning no hitter. I was like, well, why doesn't it happen more than it does? You know, so you still got to go out and get every out. So yeah, I think they're all different in certain ways, but yeah, they were special. I was really proud to be part of all 3.
Yeah. I remember watching that game and I was impressed. Just, he seemed like, you know, not that it was easy, but he just seemed like he was just in control and cruise control almost. It just, nothing fazed him, and it was just, you know, give me the ball and let's go. Just, mm-hmm. You know, it was very impressive, and it was just, again, it just seemed like you just had a feeling like this was going to happen because of just how smooth it went for him and how mm-hmm. he just seemed like he was locked in, and it was a very impressive outing.
Yeah, and of course he got the promotion to AAA, and I don't know, his first AAA start didn't really go that well, and you know, there can be a lot of different explanations for that. I know the, you know, the ABS system I heard that night didn't really treat him so favorably, but you know, well, what we've seen from him, I remember going back to the beginning of the year when I got our rotation for the first time, and I, you know, with De Avila, who was, you know, an all-star at this level last year with Hurston Waldrop, I thought, well, you'll be one of those guys to be your opening day starter. And when I saw it was Mejia, I was like, oh, wow, you know, kind of surprised. But he had that tough outing in his first game. But ever since then, you know, he's been lights out with you know, mainly that fastball slider combination. He throws a splitter as well and, you know, just mixes it well and throws strikes. I think that's the biggest thing, especially at this level. If you throw strikes, you know, 80% of these hitters are going to, you know, find a way to get themselves out if you're not, you know, beating yourself up. But, you know, I mean, he's a fun guy. He's a very, very cerebral. You know, he's a quiet guy, but a great dude. You know, just the way he goes out there on the mound, it's much different than the way, you know, Spencer Schwellenbach goes about it, or the way Hurston Waldrop or De Avila goes about it. But, you know, he has that quiet confidence out there, and it's been really fun to watch him, you know, slowly work his way up to the top of the leaderboard after, you know, having that first start in which he gave up 4 or 5 runs in an inning into third. So it balloons at ERA, but, you know, now it's down to like 1.69. And now I don't think you'll go the rest of the year without getting another opportunity, you know, at a higher level. And he's been a very pleasant surprise. I think he's sort of sniffing some of the top 30s, but, you know, probably a guy that coming to the year, not many Braves fans were familiar with.
Yeah, I think when we did our player profile on him, I think we kind of admitted that even we overlooked him on our top 30. Should be there because I feel, and I think Garrett and Gaurav also, that he's someone who, if he continues to do what he's doing, has a place in the major leagues. He's not someone who's gonna, he's not somebody who's gonna wow you and like a Spencer Strider or a Schwellenbach or Waldrop, but he just does the job. He's just a bulldog out there. It's like it's just and he pitches. It was funny to me when you're describing him. It's like, oh, he pitches like the elder statesman of the rotation. He's only four. Not like he's, you know, a 28-year-old. You know, sometimes you see that in AAA where you'll see somebody who's been back and forth on that, you know, AAA to major league shuttle back. You know, and they are like that elder statesman. They're 29 or something, but he's 24. He just pitches with just a different level of maturity. It's very. We want to talk also about some of the position players. Sure. But before we move on to the position players, I do want to ask, we mentioned the splitter a lot, and I did a great job mentioning Wes McGuire. I think he deserves his flowers as he's been doing great things with his pitching staff. Is that something that is maybe the splitter is coming from Wes McGuire or the Braves organization, or is it just the product of, you know, someone like Hurston Waldrop who has such a devastating splitter?
Right.
Some of his teammates are like, hey, let me see if I can throw something like that because of the data that now is available to see what pitches are, how effective they are. And from something that we've talked about a little bit is the splitter, if you can throw it, it's not the most difficult pitch to throw. And something that if you can learn to throw a good one, it's a really good pitch. So is it from the organization or Wes McGuire, or is it players talking amongst themselves and kind of feeding off each other and learning things from each other?
Yeah, good question. A lot of the answer to that question is way above my pay grade or what I would know, but it seems like more and more, you know, I started really becoming more familiar, or at least I asked more questions about it when we had Brooks Wilson the last few years, and Brooks just openly, you know, showing me. Of course, you know, Brooks said he started developing it in high school, and he would, even in class, like his high school pitching coach told him how to throw it, showed him how to throw it, but he would actually try to put a baseball in between his fingers just to try and, you know, mold that shape. And it's just insane to see him, you know, how he grips the baseball for his splitter. It's, you know, it's just crazy. But yeah, I think it's more so like I was saying earlier when, you know, I've seen some guys really talking to each other and feeding off each other. And that's the one cool thing about the Braves organization. And a shout out to Bo Henning as well. He was our pitching coach the last few years. He's now coordinator in the minor leagues. And I think for him, you know, he gets it too. And he can take a look at, you know, Hawkeye dashboard and all these numbers, and he can tell you, you know, 10 things about what that pitcher's doing. And so I think no matter if it's just the splitter or if it's the slider, you know, whatever pitch it might be, it's just, can you get that shape to where it's effective? You know, whether it's the changeup. I mean, the changeup, I think, is still in my opinion, I think it's the most effective pitch in baseball. I will always say that. I think if you can throw an effective changeup, I think that's the most effective pitch in baseball. But I think the splitter's kind of, you know, it's a changeup. It really is a changeup. It just has a little bit more movement, and you know, it's fun to look at the spin rates. Like a Hurston Waldrop splitter is, you know, between 500 and 800 RPMs. You know, Brooks Wilson was, you know, 600, 700 RPMs. Patrick Halligan's throwing one, it's more like 1,000 RPMs. But to me, that's really fascinating to see it. And I think it more so is, you know, I like the fact that the Braves organization allows these guys the freedom to experiment and to help develop pitches that can be successful. And, you know, there's so much, it's kind of weird how the game of baseball has evolved, because, you know, for many, many years, and still now, I mean, velocity is important and you want guys that can throw hard, but, you know, the big difference to me, and of course I get to call some college baseball before our season. If you got velocity, you can get people out in college. At this level of baseball, you get to Double-A baseball, everybody can hit a fastball. I don't care how hard you can throw it, unless you're Ben Joyce and you're throwing 103. I mean, anybody can hit a 98 mile an hour fastball if you know it's coming and it's flat. But if you can throw a couple of pitches for strikes beyond your fastball, that's when you can make the leap. And so, you know, for a lot of different pitchers, it's, no matter how talented you are, you have to experiment. I don't think there's any pitcher that you probably talk to that has come through the minors, and once they got from the bottom of the barrel to the big leagues, they're throwing the exact same thing. I'm sure their pitches have evolved, and probably they evolve over the years as you know, the mileage adds up on their arms. But I think it's a little bit of both. I think it really is, but it's really fascinating to, like I said, I really enjoy, you know, being a sponge and listening, and when I have time, you know, adding it to the broadcast, because you know, for fans, they want to know why a guy is successful. You know, why is he, you know, throwing six shutout innings and he's throwing just a fastball, or why is Hayden Harris just throwing a fastball and getting guys out? So it's neat to see. And I think you can give, you know, the Braves player development a lot of credit on the pitching side, because it's not really a dictation. It's more so, let's sit down, and it's probably on an individual basis, but let's sit down and see what works best for you. How do you feel about that? And that's, you know, I mean, how many years has it been? The Braves just, it's so funny talking to people from other organizations. They're like, I don't know how the Braves do it. Like every year they have great pitchers. What's the deal? But it's truly a remarkable thing. And I don't know if it's in the water, but it's fun to see.
You know, I think you've made some great points. I think the Braves, and actually I think it's encouraging to know that the Braves are allowing these players to explore and kind of tinker and mold themselves into what they do best, instead of trying to fit every square peg into a round hole, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, everyone wants to come up and have an arm like a Mason, or as you said, a Ben Joyce, you can throw 102, 103, of course, but some guys can't do that. But if you allow someone like a Hayden Harris, who can get guys out at 92, 93, you know, even 91, because they are just able to be effective with that pitch, then let them be the best version of that. And I think we're seeing that with so many different profiles on the mound, but all effective. And I think that's just, you know, kudos to the Braves organization and that Mississippi staff. I do, like I said, I think we'd be, you know, remiss to not mention our number one position player prospect, Nacho Alvarez, also is in Mississippi. What can you tell us about Nacho Alvarez? You get to watch him play almost every night.
You know, it's interesting with a lot of these players. You see them, you see their names. I don't get a chance to watch as much, you know, Augusta games or Rome games as you guys do. So, but I see their names. I see their names in lineups. I see their names in box scores. So, you know, I've been seeing Ignacio Alvarez Jr., Nacho Alvarez for several years. And but then when we get a chance to watch him play every day, it's you know, so much fun. But the one thing about Nacho that from day one I realized, I said, okay, this guy's got a high baseball IQ. This guy knows what he's doing. He's a student of the game. And you know, I he's one of the smartest baseball players, position player wise, that I've seen come through here. And you know, he's similar to Hurston Waldrop in a way, in the fact that they're almost expecting perfection, even though it's not sometimes going to be there. But Nacho, you know, is always trying to get better. He can have a 2-3 hit game, and the next day in the batting cage, he's trying to figure out a way to get better, because two of those hits maybe were, you know, below 100 off the bat exit velo, and he thinks he, you know, should have had, you know, 3 over 100. So, you know, he's a student of the game. And, you know, one of the things I was sort of told was, well, body wise, he might not necessarily profile as a shortstop. Okay, whatever. But he's made every play that he should make. And then he's made a lot of plays that, you know, your average double A shortstop usually doesn't make. So I think he's a really good player. I mean, there's not one specific tool that you look at and you're like, wow, that's the 80 grade. That's his ticket. But he does so many different things well. And because that baseball IQ is so high, he's constantly going to get better and better and better. Yeah, power doesn't have a home run yet. He's still driving the ball. You watch him in BP, he can hit the ball longer than anybody. I promise you the power's there. It's going to come. But, you know, I'm just amazed at his knowledge of the game, the way he goes about his business. He's the consummate professional as one of the younger, maybe the youngest player on the team. And that's what I'm taking away. I think those numbers are going to continue to go up. And that's my takeaway with Nacho so far. It's just been his ability to be a steady, you know, smart leader on that team. And you can just, you know, tell that other guys on the team look at him differently. Like, okay, that guy's different.
I like hearing you talk about the power with Nacho. I think that's really kind of been the concern for everybody. Mm-hmm. But hearing you say that, it's just like, that's a relief. Cause you know, I know a lot of people have said, you know, the strength is there. It's just about getting to it. And so, you know, we're excited to see that with Nacho, but you know, you talk about baseball IQ, and we've heard a lot from the Braves and from other people that the Braves really value when they go acquire players. They value the makeup of players, baseball IQ, how they are as clubhouse presences. Do you feel that in terms of the players that come through, as if, you know, there's a certain clubhouse culture with the Braves, or a certain approach that they're looking for with players, where they're trying to target specifically guys that have that high IQ, who are good, you know, hardworking type players?
No doubt. I mean, the team this year, I mean, we started out 7-15, got down 10 games below 500. And, you know, a lot of credit goes to Angel Flores, our manager, too. There was never any panic. And because there's so many positive, high character guys in that clubhouse, yeah, they were disappointed. Yeah, they were ticked off, but they never, you know, never took a downward spiral like you can a lot of times see. And, you know, look what happened. They went on a 7-game winning streak, and they, you know, are knocking on the door, getting back to 500. So I think that tells you a lot about the mentality there. But yeah, I mean, that's the one thing I can never, you know, one thing that has always been interesting over the years, when you're around like scouts, and, you know, they'll drop in the radio booth, and this happens at every level with every guy, every broadcaster usually. And they want to ask you about, you know, his pop time or his pitches or anything like that. They'll ask you about a makeup, you know, what's he like in the clubhouse? And, you know, I've never, since I've been with the Braves, ever said anything that was negative about a player. And I mean, this year's team is full of high character individuals. I never expect to get any sort of, you know, downward vibes. So they've been a lot of fun to be around. And I, you know, the last couple of years, it's just been a really, really positive thing. And I think for Braves fans, you see that when they get to the big leagues. I mean, a guy like Michael Harris, you know, a guy like Spencer Strider, just really fun, good, genuine human beings. And that means a lot. And I think for Braves fans to know, you know, from someone who's, you know, seen them at a, you know, more personal level, yeah, they're genuine good dudes that really, really care about, you know, what they're doing both on the field and off the field. And that's something that's really preached. And there's been a lot of people. I, you know, we were just in Chattanooga and Terry Pendleton was there. And I tell you what, there's nobody I love more seeing come around than Terry Pendleton. Number one, I grew up in the '90s watching the Cardinals and Braves when he was playing, but you know, TP is one of those guys that, you know, he doesn't just come in and, hey, look at me, I'm Terry Pendleton, I'm a Braves Hall of Famer, I had a great career, I was an MVP. He literally gets in the cage, works with these guys, but not only that, but he talks about how you carry yourself. And there's so many ambassadors, you know, that come around that talk about that. And that's just fun to see. I mean, that you just know, okay, they get it. They get what it's all about. Yeah, winning's the number one priority, but you don't have to win and be a, you know, a terrible person. So you really respect that. I've always really respected that because that's how I try to carry myself. That's how I was raised. So, yeah, that's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I think the Braves do a really good job. They have a lot of those type of guys that have come through Atlanta and have become kind of mentors to some of their guys in the system. And it just seems like this organization really prides themselves on character. And, you know, I really, really like that they do that because you don't have issues that pop up in the clubhouse. And if they do pop up, they don't last very long. They're usually not going to become a long-term distraction. So, you know, in fact, to the Nacho thing, I think what you said about him is everything we've heard. So it's good to know that's really kind of who he is as a player. And I'm excited. And I also just his bat to ball skills and the fact that you are reiterating that he is actually looking like someone who can stick at shortstop is good too. I also, it's not a surprise to Garrett or Gaurav, but as someone who lives in the Bay Area and is a big Cal guy, you know, one of my favorite guys on Mississippi's roster is Keyshawn Ogans. Can you just tell me a little bit about him? Because he's my personal favorite, and I know that Garrett did not think I was going to get through this interview without asking about him.
You asked about Keyshawn. Okay. All right. Well, number one, I've tried to see if I could get him to grow his hair back out like he had when he was at Cal. Because that was pretty epic, but no, he's had a little bit of a slow start to the season, but you can see what's there. You can tell he's just a, you know, he's a good quality hitter. He's a good gap to gap guy. His defense has been outstanding. He's mostly played third base and, you know, he's been above average at third base. And, you know, as the year's gone on, you can tell he's getting a lot more comfortable. I mean, the jump to double A, like there's a reason why it's the toughest jump to make. And, you know, I think as the year goes on, he's going to make more adjustments. He had a good week last week. I think he had 6 RBIs in the series last week in Chattanooga. So, you know, he's going to, as the season goes on, he's going to be that steady run producer for us. And yeah, I love the kid. I've had a lot of fun talking with him and I told him, I said, you know, if you want to go on a hot streak, you gotta start growing that hair out, man. I see those old YouTube videos of him at Cal. That was pretty epic.
Yeah, it might be a little bit hotter in Mississippi than it was out here.
True.
I don't blame him. I used to grow my hair out, you know, when I played football, and cut that thing off as soon as the season was over. Cause when it got to the, you know, springtime and baseball out here in California, I was in the Central Valley and I was like, yeah, I'm not doing the shoulder length hair with 110 degrees. Can't do it. But yeah, I'm excited. I really do think I believe in the kid, and I think he can be that utility player. He'd play all over the diamond. He's not gonna, you know, he's not gonna be one of those guys that's gonna consistently knock the cover off the ball, but I think he could handle his own. And like you said, he plays defense well, and I think there's a spot for those guys on every roster. So
yeah, Ogans for me was a guy that really kind of stood out pretty early after he was drafting, you know, a 20th round pick, but it's just the way he kind of plays the game where no matter what the Braves ask him to do, he goes out and he does it to his best. And you know, I've been really impressed by that. I assume you've kind of felt the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. I don't know if the question was for me or not, but yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, we're gonna have a couple more questions here, and unfortunately, we're gonna get to the questions that Mississippi Braves fans are not too happy about. But we're gonna start out talking about those fans, and you know, as important as you know, the players and the coaches and everything are to an organization, the fans are kind of what drives the energy in the stadium. And Mississippi, they tend to lag behind in attendance, but from what I've seen, there's a very strong contingent of fans in Jackson that are, you know, diehard Mississippi Braves fans. And for you being able to interact with fans, what has there been a particular moment for you that stood out as an interaction with a fan, be it with you with a fan or, you know, a player that has interacted well with fans?
Yeah. You know, I tell you what, you know, the one thing about the minor leagues, you really get to know, you know, those diehard fans and, you know, the ones that are constantly, you know, listening to games and following the games and, you know, that are always there, that are always there. The ones that get there early to get autographs and things like that. I think one of the biggest thrills I've had is getting to know a young man. His first name is Evan. And, you know, Evan is autistic. And he's also one of the most incredible human beings I've ever met in my life. He listens to every single game, has his big headsets on. And, you know, sometimes on nights his family has season tickets behind home plate. And of course he gets into every pitch. You know, sometimes I can even hear him down there, you know, trying to call the game along, you know, as I'm calling the game. And a few years ago, one of the TV stations had come out and did a story on, you know, his passion for the game and that he listens to every game. And you know, they asked him, they said, well, what's your favorite part of the ball game, you know, when you come out? He goes, oh, when Chris says kiss it goodbye on a home run, you know. So that I've thoroughly enjoyed, you know, creating a relationship with Evan Slay and his family, and that's the little things that just makes you smile. You know, you're just going and doing your job every day, but it, you know, when you find someone that it really truly makes a difference for and gives them a thrill, then you know, that just makes you feel really good.
Yeah, I think that's something that is unique and also incredible about baseball, where the minor leagues, when you have a team in your hometown or nearby, the connection that you can build with a game of baseball and players who you're going to follow their entire career, it's something unlike you get in any other sport. I remember talking to Gaurav about this before, but when I was a kid, I grew up about 20 minutes from where the Stockton Ports played. And they did a baseball clinic for my youth baseball league out in my hometown and got to meet some of the guys, and we got tickets to the game after. And so I went and actually got to play catch in the bullpen with Ben Sheets when he was a Brewers prospect coming up, because he's one of the guys that did the baseball camp. And it's just something I never forgot. And when he's got signed with the Braves, it was kind of just special to me because I remembered that when I was a kid at, you know, I think it was 12 years old, playing catch with Ben Sheets, and I never forget that. And then I got to actually be at his last real start in San Francisco with the Braves. Again, it's just something that stuck with me. And I think that that's something that's incredible for families and kids, especially, who get that proximity to players that you're never going to get in any other sport, really. And even if you live in Atlanta, you get have season tickets to the Braves, you still don't get to be that close to those and have those interactions. It's something very special. And, you know, it's just an incredible experience that I truly believe.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. And speaking about that, you know, it's been announced that next year the Braves are going to be moving out of their franchise out of Mississippi and into Columbus, Georgia, which is, you know, exciting for fans who are of the Braves or in Georgia, have the team closer. But again, like I said, it's a little bit tougher for those families who live near, you know, Mississippi now, but it's going to be pretty tough. But, you know, what are your overall feelings on this move?
Loaded question there. You know, you learn, you're in this game long enough, you understand that it's a business. And, you know, I go back to the fact that, you know, the Atlanta Braves made a 20-year agreement, a 20-year lease to be here, and they fulfilled that agreement. They provided 20 years of unbelievable talent and great memories for Earl and the surrounding areas. So, you know, I think that's been sort of my mindset this year, and Thinking about all those, people, all those fans, all the people that have come through here, and trying to finish it off, in the best way possible. That obviously, it's hard. It's tough as well. I mean, I'm always someone who is, very honest about things, and it's scary to think, what's going to happen beyond this year. There's a lot of unknowns for different people, but like you said, I mean, for the fans over there, they're, going to be able to enjoy, Double A Braves baseball for a long time. I was able to be a part of a brand new franchise when Huntsville moved down to Biloxi in 2015, and being a part of that first season and the excitement around that, is something that I'll never forget. That was the year we actually, the stadium wasn't ready, and we had to play a 54 game road trip, which was insane, but it was still something that was, something I'll never forget. So yeah, it's all the range of emotions for sure. It depends on kind of the day, the way the feelings are and the mood is. So yeah, you sort of tiptoe around some things, but you realize at the end of the day, it's a business. And whether you're a player, you're a coach, you're a member of the front office, you're a part of that business. And there's some things you can control and some things you can't.
Yeah, I know when the news kind of broke for me, it was one of those things where, like I kind of mentioned earlier, we have so many Mississippi Braves fans, that are responding to us on Twitter and stuff. And so it was kind of, you feel bad for them while also selfishly being like, well, I'm a few hours closer to Columbus now. 'Cause, for me, I live near the Stryper Stadium, and making a trip out to Mississippi is like, that's a long way. And, kind of going to Columbus, I think for people who are fans in that area, and the Braves really like to have their teams and their players close, it's good for them, but it's also kind of like it sucks to know that those fans are losing, such a part of their community and such a part of their life.
Yeah, and I tell you, the Braves are lucky. A lot of the teams, especially West Coast teams. I mean, you're from out in, when you're out in the Bay Area, you those teams don't have a Double A league within 400 miles. I remember when I was with a Mariners affiliate, the Low A was in Clinton, Iowa, the High A was in Adelanto, California, the Double A was in Jackson, Tennessee, and Triple A was in Tacoma, Washington. So you literally had to crisscross the country to get to the major leagues. So that's one thing about the game and about the minors, I think, that has improved, is the fact that they try, and keyword try, to make things geographically pleasing as possible with their affiliates. I mean, still you have what the Richmond Flying Squirrels are the Double A for the San Francisco Giants on one coast to the other coast. So, in some situation, it's not possible. So, for Atlanta to have all their teams now right there close, that is such a major advantage. So, a lot of teams just don't have that capability, and Atlanta does.
Well, Chris, we have been talking for quite a while now, and we appreciate you a ton. I mean, this was above and beyond what we were hoping for. You've done fantastic, and we really appreciate you. Is there anything that you want to kind of plug before we sign off?
Man, I just appreciate you guys. I read a lot of you guys' stuff, and sometimes I have my I still call it tweet deck. I guess it's X Pro now, up during games, and we'll read your information sometimes that you put out there. That's always fantastic. But no, I just appreciate you guys, your dedication, your hard work, and it doesn't go unnoticed for people like me that work in this industry on a daily basis. And no, just anytime, tune in to one of our games, and feel free to shoot me a note and try to get over to Mississippi for a game. Would love to see you, love to meet you guys, and hoping for a nice push here in the first half, and maybe a championship to close out this chapter.
Absolutely. And you guys can follow Chris on X at C Harris 731. He does drop in some notes every now and then that are very helpful. I mean, I tend to enjoy reading your Twitter. You're one of the guys that I make sure to keep up with. And I appreciate you having me on, Joe. I appreciate you. And I guess we'll sign off on this episode. Thank you guys, and we'll see you next time.